after the discovery of ancient arcanic artifacts. A satellite scan has confirmed the presence of expansive arcanic ruins throughout the refuge foothills region. Though the GC academic community is hailing the find for its historical significance, the discovery has caused problems for the Seed municipality, who have been suffering chronic water shortages. Alexandria University and the Hashcath Institute of Interstellar Migration have assembled a joint archaeological survey team to study the site. The Seed municipal government has filed an official aid request to the diaspora in hopes of receiving funding to purchase portable water reclamators as a stopgap measure. In galactic news, the Hawk Press border war continues to intensify as Aelion troops enter their third standard year of armed conflict with Rosk Synergy. The deaths of 26 GC civilians on Kalo were reported this morning following a Rosk bombing run. Though the Aelion government has released few details concerning their military efforts, reports from the area indicate that there has been an increase in Aelion troop deployment throughout the Kalo region. This concludes the evening update. Our morning update will be ready to access at 10th hour tomorrow. For more in-depth coverage on these stories and more, provided in both vid and text, connect to the Thread feed via Scrib or Neural Patch. Thank you, and fly safely. Day 131, GC Standard 306. Blind Punch. Breakfast was laid out on the kitchen counter when Rosemary returned to the fishbowl in the morning. Two big bowls of fruit, stored in the Stacy by the look of the pale skin, a basket of unfamiliar pastries, and a large hot pot full of some sort of dark brown porridge. Dr. Chef stood behind the counter, chopping vegetables with two hand feet, drying cutlery with another pair. His cheeks puffed out as she approached.
"Good morning,"
he said.
"How'd you sleep?"
"Not bad," she said, climbing onto a stool. "Woke up a little confused a few times." Dr. Chef nodded.
"It's never easy sleeping in a new place. You're lucky we had a human-style bed already installed in that cabin. When I first joined the crew, I had to wait a few days before we got furniture I could fit myself into." He gestured to the food on the counter. "Breakfast here is a help-yourself affair, as is lunch. Snacks are available throughout the day, so stop by whenever you're peckish. Oh, and there's always tea. You can get yourself a cup anytime you like." He pointed towards two large decanters perched on the far end of the counter. A rack of mugs rested alongside. There were two hand-drawn labels affixed to the decanters. "Happy Tea," read one, above a drawing of a wide-eyed, grinning human with frizzy hair standing on end. "Boring Tea," read the other. The human drawn there looked content, but indifferent. The handwriting was the same as the sign on the fishbowl door. Kizzies.
"Boring Tea?" Rosemary asked.
"No caffeine. Just a lovely, normal, herbal tea," said Dr. Chef. "I'll never understand why you humans like the jittery stuff so much. As a doctor, I hate starting off your mornings with stimulants. But as a cook, I understand how important breakfast habits are."
He wagged one of his pudgy fingers at her.
"But no more than 3 cups a day, and definitely not on an empty stomach."
"Don't worry," Rosemary said, reaching for a mug. "I'm more of a boring tea person myself." Dr. Chef looked pleased. She pointed at the rolls.
"These smell wonderful. What are they?"
The answer came from behind.
"Smoky buns," Kizzy cheered. She jumped onto a stool and grabbed one of the yellowish pastries. She began to eat with one hand and dished out some porridge with the other.
"Smoky buns?
Yet another thing from my home that doesn't have an easily translatable name," said Dr. Chef. "He makes them every time we tunnel," Kizzy said, loading up a plate with an additional bun and a pile of fruit. "They're good, solid fuel for a hard day of work."
He squinted at Kizzy as she filled a mug with happy tea.
"Unlike that."
"I know, I know. 3-cup limit, I promise," she said.
She turned to Rosemary, cupping her mug between her palms.
"What's the verdict on the curtains?"
"They're great,"
Rosemary said. They make things feel homey. It was true. She'd almost forgotten that she was no longer living planetside until she'd drawn the curtains back that morning and found a stellar system floating majestically right outside. Even though she had traveled between planets before, the notion that she was now living out in the open still hadn't sunk in. She bit down into a smoky bun. The bread was airy soft, the unidentified filling rich and savory, somewhat reminiscent of roasted mushrooms. Smoky, yes, but also lightly spiced, with just the right amount of salt. She looked up to Dr. Chef, who was watching her eagerly. These are amazing. Dr. Chef beamed. The filling's made from Jesku. I think you Solans call it white tree fungus. Rather different from the ingredients I grew up with, but it's a good approximation. And the buns are high in protein, too. I supplement the grain with mealworm flour. He won't tell us his recipe, Kizzy said. Bastard's gonna take it to his grave. Grum don't have graves. To the bottom of the ocean, then. That's even worse than a grave. Graves you can at least dig up. She shook a bun at him. Some dumb fish is gonna eat whatever part of your brain stores this recipe, and we'll be lost without it. Better eat them while you can, then, Dr. Chef said. His cheeks gave a fluttering puff. Rosemary had deduced that the faster the puffs, the bigger the smile. So, Kizzy said, turning her attention to Rosemary, this is your first time tagging along for a punch, right? Sorry, what? Rosemary said. Kizzy chuckled. That answers my question. A punch is the act of making a tunnel. Oh, right. Rosemary sipped her tea. Slightly sweet, nothing special. Okay, so it was a little boring, but comforting nonetheless. I was actually wondering, she paused, not wanting to sound stupid. I know I'll never have to help out with the tunneling stuff, but I'd like to have a better understanding of how it works. Kizzy pressed her lips together with excitement. You want me to give you a crash course? If it's no trouble, that is. Ah, stars and buckets, of course it's no trouble. I am flattered, and you are adorable. Right, okay. Have you taken any courses in interspatial manipulation? Probably not, huh? I can't say that I have. Space-time topology? Nope. Transdimensional theory? Rosemary made an apologetic face. Oh, said Kizzy, clasping her hands over her heart. You're a physics virgin! Okay, we'll keep this simple. She looked around the counter for props. Okay, cool, here. The area above my bowl of porridge, she gestured importantly, is the fabric of space. The porridge itself is the sublayer, basically the space in between space. And this groob, she picked up a small black fruit from her plate, is the wayfarer. Oh, I can't wait to see this, Dr. Chef said, resting his top arms on the opposite side of the counter. Kizzy cleared her throat and straightened up. So here's us, she swooped the berry over the bowl. We've got two ends of space to connect, right? Here and here. She pressed her finger down into the porridge, making indentations on opposite ends of the bowl. So we travel to one end. Whoosh! And all the people seeing us fly by are like, oh my stars, look at that totally amazing ship. What genius tech patched together such a thing? I'm like, oh, that's me, Kizzy Shao. You can all name your babies after me. Whoosh! And then we get to our start point. She hovered the berry above the disappearing dent in the porridge. Once we're in position, I turn on the interspatial boar. Did you see it when you flew in? Big old monster machine strapped to our belly? It's a beast. Runs on ambi cells. Our entire ship couldn't hold the amount of algae you'd need to power it. Oh, and fair warning, it's noisy as hell. So don't freak out while it's doing its thing. We're not blowing up or anything. So yes, boar warms up. Then we punch. She slammed the berry down into the porridge. And then it gets weird. Weird how? Rosemary said.
Well, we're just squishy little three-dimensional creatures. Our brains can't process what goes on in the sublayer. Technically, the sublayer is outside of what we consider normal time. Understanding what's going on in there is like... it's like telling someone, a human, I mean, to see an infrared. We just can't do it. So, in the sublayer, you feel that something is wrong with the world, but you can't put your finger on what it is. It's very, very weird. Have you ever done Daffy? Rosemary blinked. Where she was from, people didn't casually ask about illegal hallucinogens over breakfast. No, I haven't. Well, it's kind of like that. Your visual perception and sense of time gets all fucked up. But the difference is that you're fully in control of your actions. When you're studying for your tunneling license, that's separate from basic tech studies, so believe me when I say I'm super glad I'll never have to set foot in a school again, you have to practice stuff like fixing the engines or entering in commands after taking a dose of Sofro, which is basically a dumbed-down, government-issued version of Daffy. Worst homework ever, I assure you. But you get used to it. She stuck her fingers into the porridge, getting a grip on the hidden berry. Okay, so while we're all tripping balls, the ship's pushing through the sublayer, dropping buoys to force the tunnel open. The buoys are there for two reasons. One, they keep the tunnel from collapsing, and two, they generate this field made up of all the same strings and particles and stuff that normal space is made out of. Rosemary nodded. Artificial space. Finally, a concept she somewhat understood. But why do that? So that it's an easy ride for anybody traveling through. That's why you don't notice a difference when you tunnel hop. And none of this messes up the space outside? I mean, here in our space? Nope, not if you do it right. That's why we're pros. Rosemary nodded towards the porridge. So how do we get out of the sublayer? Okay, Kizzy said. She started pushing the groove through the porridge. Once we get to our exit point, we bust back through. She shoved a spoon under the groove, catapult style, and raised her fist. Kizzy, said Dr. Chef, his voice even, if you launch porridge all over my nice clean countertop... I won't. I just realized this won't work. My genius demonstration is flawed, she frowned. I can't fold porridge. Here, said Dr. Chef. He handed her two cloth napkins. One for your hand, one for educational purposes. Ah, said Kizzy, cleaning the porridge from her fingers. Perfecto. She held up the clean napkin, gripping two opposite corners. Okay, you know the big grid-like spheres surrounding tunnel openings with all the blinking warning lights and crackly lightning stuff coming off the joints? Those are containment cages. They keep space from ripping open any farther than we want it to. You have to have one cage on each end of the tunnel. She gestured with the corners of the napkin. So, if we've got one cage at this end and another cage at this end, we've got to construct a tunnel that effectively makes it so that this, she stretched the corners far apart from one another, is the same thing as this. She brought the corners together. Rosemary frowned. She had a rough idea of how tunnels worked, but she'd never been able to make the idea stick. Okay, so the cages are light years apart. They're not in the same place, but... they behave as if they were in the same place? Pretty much. It's like a doorway connecting two rooms, only the rooms are on opposite sides of town. So the only place the distance between those two points has been changed is within the tunnel. Kizzy grinned. Physics is a bitch, right? Rosemary stared at the napkin, struggling to make her three-dimensional brain work with these concepts. How do you get the cages in place? Wouldn't it take forever to travel from one end to the other? Gold star for the lady in the pretty yellow top, Kizzy said. You are totally correct. That's why there are two different ways of building a tunnel. The easy way is what we call an anchored punch. These take place in systems that already have existing tunnels connecting them to other places. So, say you want to connect Stellar System A to Stellar System B. Both System A and System B already connect to System C. You drop a cage in System A, you hop through the existing tunnel from System A to System C. Then you hop from System C to System B. You drop the second cage, and then you punch back to System A. Rosemary nodded. That makes sense. Sounds like a roundabout way to get there, though. Oh, definitely. And it's rarely a two-hop trip like that, especially if the tunnels connect to different planets within the system. Usually takes us a few 10 days to get between jobs, sometimes more if we've got a lot of space to cover. That's part of what Sysix does, charting the fastest ways to get between existing tunnels. Rosemary took a second bun and cracked it open. A puff of steam rose from the fragrant pocket within. What if the system you're tunneling to isn't connected to anywhere? Aha! Then you do a blind punch. What's that? Drop a cage at one end, punch through, and find your way to the other side, which is crazy hard to do without the second cage to guide you. Once you get back out, you're working against the clock to get the cage up. Cages are self-constructing, so all you can really do is deploy the pieces and wait a day. But still, you have to deploy it as soon as you get out. Having a cage on one end of the tunnel and none on the other makes things inside unstable. At first, it's no problem, but the longer you wait, the faster it starts to tear. If that happens, it all goes to shit. And when the fabric of space goes to shit, you've got a really big problem. Like the Kajmet Expanse. Learning about the Kajmet Expanse was something of a rite of passage for youngsters. The moment when you realized that space, for all its silent calm, was a dangerous place. The Kajmet Expanse was a Harmagian territory, half the size of the Sol system, in which space had been completely rent asunder. The pictures from there were terrifying. Asteroids drifting into invisible holes, planets snapped in half, a dying star leaking into a debris-crusted tear. Yeah, that's a leftover from way back when the Harmagians started building tunnels. All the first ones were blind punches. Had to be. No other way to get from system to system except for going FTL. Right, said Rosemary, nodding. The ban against FTL was one of the oldest laws on the books, predating the founding of the GC. While traveling faster than light was technologically possible, the logistical and social problems caused by what basically amounted to time travel far outweighed the gains. And aside from the administrative nightmare, few people were keen on a method of transportation that guaranteed everyone you knew back home would be long dead by the time you reached your destination. But why not get between systems with a... oh, I don't know what it's called. The things D-pods use. A pinhole drive. Right. So a pinhole drive dips you in and out of the sublayer really fast, like a needle and thread. They basically make a bunch of tiny temporary tunnels to get between places super fast. That much I knew. Okay. Pinhole jumps are fine with a little bitty single-person craft like a D-pod, because the holes it makes are too small to do any real damage. Without a cage, the hole closes right up. Think of it like a baby blind punch, only the trajectory is mapped out with a series of marker buoys ahead of time, so the D-pod is always following the exact same sublayer path. That's also why D-pods have designated travel lanes in populated areas, and why they're equipped with multi-dimensional warning beacons. You don't want a D-pod jumping out of the sublayer into your hull. You can't use pinhole drives with big ships? You can, but it's not a good idea. Holes that big really wear on space. And if you have a lot of them relatively close together, like you would in a D-pod lane, they could potentially tear into each other. As a once-in-a-while thing, doing pinhole jumps with a big ship is okay.
But if you were sending something the size of our ship in and out of the sublayer as often as a D-pod, yeah, that wouldn't be good. Also, pinhole drives are expensive as hell to install, so pretty much no big ships bother with them. Now, if you really need to get somewhere fast, and I mean need, like serious business need, you can put in a request for a pinhole tug. A tug can drag a big ship to wherever it needs to be. Same risks apply, but tugs are super regulated, and they're careful with how they use them. You have to get approval from the transport board to use a tug. You see tugs for things like, I don't know, if you need to get a med ship to a bunch of refugees fast, or if the government's sending someone outside of GC space, where we don't have tunnels. So, for ordinary stuff like tunneling, using a pinhole drive isn't worth the cost, or the risk. Rosemary took a long sip from her mug. The boring tea was growing on her. Something sweet and unassuming was the perfect complement for the smoky buns. Dr. Chef sure knew what he was doing. Blind punches sound pretty risky on their own, though. They are. There aren't many travelers licensed to do them. That's why we get paid well. Well enough, anyway. This ship does blind punches? Rosemary didn't like that idea. Burrowing through the space in between space without a clear idea of where you'd be coming back out did not sound like something she wanted to tag along for. Yep, we'll be doing one today. She patted Rosemary's shoulder. Don't worry. I know it sounds scary, but we do this all the time. Trust me, we're super safe. Trust me. This coming from the tech in a grubby jumpsuit with to-do lists written on her sleeve. Rosemary needed a little more reassurance than that. How do you know where the ship should come back at? Well, we don't. The best any computer program can do with a blind punch is an educated guess, and that's not good enough. That's why you need a cyanet pair. You can't do blind punches without a navigator, not legally or practically, said Dr. Chef. You need someone who can comprehend what's going on in the sublayer, someone who can visualize what's going on. An AI can't do it, Rosemary said. She knew that there were still things that technology couldn't do, but being reminded of it always surprised her. Nope. Think about it, Kizzy said. AIs can't be any smarter than the people who create them. We can code in all the crazy maths and theories we want, but we can't make an AI do things that we don't understand ourselves. And not to freak you out, but we definitely don't understand the sublayer. We've got ideas about it, sure, but the only species who really gets it are the cyanet, which means the only people who should make an AI on a par with the cyanet are the cyanet themselves. And they sure as hell aren't gonna do that. Why not? Because it's heresy, Dr. Chef said. The cyanet believe that the abilities the Whisperer gives them are sacred gifts. They believe that since the virus doesn't affect other species aren't meant to possess those abilities. They're happy to do the work for us, but they're not going to share their understanding, not even with software. Interesting, Rosemary said. Weird, she thought. Okay, so regardless of what kind of a punch you're doing, isn't it possible that you can come out not just in another place, but in another time? Absolutely, Kizzy said. That's why we do our very, very best not to fuck things up. Oh, that reminds me. She hopped off the stool and ran over to the Vox in the kitchen. Lovey, can you get me Jenks, please? There was a pause. The Vox snapped to life.
Mwah,
said Jenks on the other end. Come get your smoky buns, Sleepy, before I eat them all, Kizzy said.
What time is it?
9th hour-ish. You're late.
What? Are we at the punch site yet?
About an hour out.
Shit, Kizzy! Kizzy, I am so hungover.
I know.
This is entirely your fault.
I know, sweetie. Come get smoky buns.
Don't sweetie me. We're not friends anymore. Are you in the kitchen?
Yes.
Dr. Chef, please tell me you have some sober-ups on hand.
There's an unopened box in the med bay, said Dr. Chef, puffing his cheeks.
Okay, sighed Jenks. Okay.
The vox clicked off. Dr. Chef gave Kizzy a look. Just what did you two get up to last night? Kizzy took a bite of porridge.
Waterball semifinals. I thought it'd be more fun as a drinking game.
Who was playing?
Skydivers versus fast hands. Jenks and I each picked a team, and we had to drink when the other scored.
Who did you pick?
Fast hands.
I take it they won? Kizzy grinned.
By 12.
Dr. Chef exhaled a disparaging rumble and fixed his beady eyes on Rosemary.
Some advice? If Kizzy ever says the words, "You know what would be a great idea," ignore whatever comes after.
Don't listen to him, Kizzy said. All my ideas are great.
Dr. Chef studied Rosemary, considering something.
You know, I always sedate myself before a punch. I've never got used to the sublayer, so I find it easier to sleep through it. No one will fault you if you care to join me.
Thanks, Rosemary said, but I think I'd like to see how it's done.
Atta girl, said Kizzy, clapping Rosemary on the back. Don't you worry. It's a kick in the head, but it's a fun kick in the head.
An hour later, in the control room, Rosemary was buckling the safety harness on her chair when the cyanid pair entered the room. Rosemary could not help but stare. She had seen pictures of pairs before, but seeing one in the flesh was different. Ohan had a lanky, four-limbed body with broad feet and unsettlingly long fingers. They walked on all fours, back bowed, rather like the archival vids Rosemary had seen of earthen primates. Ohan was covered from scalp to toenails with dense, ice-blue fur, trimmed short and decorated with shaved fractal patterns that revealed coal-gray skin beneath. Their eyes were enormous, long-lashed, and visibly wet. Rosemary had read the night before that overactive tear ducts were one of the cyanid virus's many quirks. Their furry face looked relaxed, almost drugged, a look that was corroborated by their loosely held shoulders, the slowness of their motions. They wore robes, of a sort, a snug garment so simple in design that it seemed like an afterthought. Rosemary knew it was unfair to judge other sapients by human social norms, but Ohan gave her the impression of a stoned college student showing up late to class in nothing but a bathrobe. She reminded herself that this stoned college student could outmatch an AI when it came to interdimensional physics.
There's the other half of my team, Sizzix said with a friendly smile. This should be a fun one,
Ohan nodded once toward her, moving with polite formality.
We always enjoy our work with you, they said.
Hey, Ohan,
Ashby said, looking up from his control panel as the cyanid pair took their seat.
How are you today?
Ohan sat hunched on their back haunches, their joints folded up tightly, making the pair appear much shorter than when they walked in.
Very well, thank you, Ashby, they said.
They curved their head towards Corbin, before turning their attention back to their workstation. They flicked their long fingers over the controls, bringing the visual readouts to life. Several seconds went by before they raised their head again, noticing that something in the room was different. Their head turned towards Rosemary, owl-like.
Welcome, they said with a single nod.
As they spoke, Rosemary could see a row of flat teeth. She had read that pairs filed down their carnivorous points. The thought made her shiver. Rosemary returned the nod, making sure not to break their gaze. Chin down, eyes up. That was how the linking reference said cyanids greeted others.
It's nice to meet you, she said. I'm looking forward to seeing you work.
Ohan gave another small nod, pleased, perhaps, and turned back to their workstation. They pulled out a scrib and a thick pixel pen. Rosemary's eyes widened when she saw that the scrib was running a basic sketch program. They weren't honestly going to puzzle out the inner workings of a wormhole by hand, were they?
Okay,
Ashby said, buckling his safety harness. Let's do this thing. Lovey, patch me through to the techs.
You're on, Lovey said.
Roll call, Ashby said.
Flight controls go, said Sissix.
Fuel check go, said Corbin.
The interspatial bore is go, said Kizzy over the vox. But I can't find my crackers, and you know I don't like to do this without snacking.
Think of it next time, Kiz, said Ashby.
Jenks?
Jenks's voice chimed in.
Buoys are go.
Lovey, ship status, said Ashby.
All ship systems performing normally, said Lovey. No technical or structural malfunctions.
Ohan, are you ready?
We are eager to begin.
Fantastic, said Ashby. He glanced back to Rosemary. You strapped in?
Rosemary nodded. She had checked the buckle 3 times.
Right then. Kizzy, start it up.
Deep down in the bowels of the ship, the boar awoke with a baritone howl. Rosemary was glad that Kizzy had warned her about the boar beforehand. It was the sort of sound that felt capable of ripping bulkheads apart. Ashby tapped the arm of his chair 10 times, evenly paced. As he tapped, a trembling grew within the hull. The thing on the underside of the ship pulsed and bellowed. The floor panels shuddered. With a terrible silence, the sky ripped open. It swallowed them. Rosemary looked out the window and realized that she'd never really seen the color black before.
Give me a heading, Ohan, said Sissix.
Ohan stared at the readouts on their screen. Their hand was already darting over the scrib, writing equations in a text that Rosemary did not recognize.
Ahead, 16.6 ibens. Full speed, please.
That's what I like to hear, said Sissix.
She threw back her feathered head with a cheer as she sent the wayfarer hurtling through nothing. There was no real way to say how much time it took to build the wormhole, because, as Kizzy had said would happen, time ceased to have any meaning. There was a clock, silently counting minutes and hours above the window, but within the sublayer, they were mere numbers to Rosemary. She kept feeling as if they had just arrived, only to then feel that they had been in there forever. She felt drunk, or worse, like trying to wake from a fever dream. Her vision swam and shifted. There was nothing beyond the screen, though that same nothingness sometimes seemed to shimmer with color and gauzy light. The buoys they launched blinked and drifted like plankton caught in waves. Voices blurred all around her, calling out complex terms that would have meant nothing to her even if she could have processed the words at normal speed. Ohan's voice was the only thing that remained steady, the eye of the storm, directing course changes to Sissix as their hand tirelessly scrawled numbers across the scrib.
All buoys deployed, Jenks said over the vox. We're ready to set up the lattice.
The words seemed to hang as if the air carrying them had thickened, even though the world itself was playing back in double time.
Initiate coupling, said Ashby.
Ashby, I think we've hit a pocket, said Sissix.
Get us out before we get stuck, said Ashby.
Ashby, I think we've hit a pocket.
Get us out before we get stuck.
Ashby, I think we've hit a pocket.
Get us out before we get stuck.
Ashby, I think we've...
30 ibens to port now,
cried Ohan. The ship lurched and groaned as Sissix jolted them aside. Somehow, despite the anti-grav nets, it felt as if they had flipped upside down, or maybe that they had been upside down to begin with.
The hell was that? Said Ashby.
Temporal pocket, said Ohan.
Where?
Ohan gave their readout screen a glance.
20 ibens starboard, 5.5 ibens wide. Give it a wide berth.
Am doing, Sissix said. Good thing we didn't get stuck.
Corbin scowled at his screen.
Looks like we did get stuck. Fuel levels are down 0.006% from where they should be.
Buoys holding? Ashby asked. Holding,
Jenks and Kizzy said in tandem. Ohan, where's our exit?
3.6 ibens ahead,
Ohan said. 2.9 ibens up. 0.73 ibens starboard.
Sissy's claws flew over the controls. Ready?
Ashby nodded. Punch it!
The bellowing below returned. Everyone slammed back into their seats, eyes snapping shut. Time returned with a thud.
Rosemary caught her breath and pulled her fingernails out from the arms of her chair.
She looked to the window. The view had changed. A red dwarf lay in the distance, surrounded by several planets. One was partially terraformed, with a small fleet of GC cargo carriers and transport ships clustered nearby. A new colony was being built. A sphere of blinking safety buoys hung in the space around the ship, their yellow lights directing others away from the Wayfarer's work area.
And that is what we call perfect, said Ashby.
He flicked through the readouts on the panel before him.
No spatial degradation, no temporal tears. We're exactly where and when we should be,
Sissix whooped. A double cheer came up over the vox, muffled behind Lovey's congratulations.
Ashby nodded, satisfied. Kizzy, Jenks, I'll leave you two to deploy the cage. The rest of you, call it a day. Great work, everybody. Well done.
You know, Ashby, said Sissix, if memory serves, big transport ships like that one there have some nice recreational facilities for weary travelers.
You don't say, said Ashby with a smirk. Well, we've just earned ourselves a nice paycheck. I'd say that calls for a few hours off ship. That is, if Ohan and Lovey don't mind keeping an eye on the cage for us.
The cyanet pair and the AI both voiced their agreement. Sissix cupped her hands towards the vox.
Party on the carrier in 2 hours, she announced.
Kezi's jubilant cry nearly drowned out Jenks, who was moaning something about sober-ups. Sissix turned back towards Rosemary.
So, newbie, what do you think?
Rosemary forced a wan smile.
It was great, she said.
She managed to turn away from the console before throwing up.
Day 132 to 145, GC Standard 306. The Job.
I hate this game,
Sissix said, frowning over the checkered pixel board.
Ashby took a bite of spice bread.
You're the one who wanted to play.
Yeah, well, I'm going to win one of these days, and then I can be done with it forever.
She rested her chin on her fists, sighed, and gestured toward her bishop. The game piece moved itself forward, leaving a faint trail of pixels in its wake.
The fact that you people have been playing this for centuries says a lot about your species.
Oh, what's it say?
That humans make everything needlessly difficult.
Ashby laughed.
I could just let you win.
Sissix's eyes narrowed.
Don't you dare.
She glanced out the fishbowl's bubbled window, watching the joints of the new containment cage fasten themselves together.
A few more hours, and they could be out of here.
Not that they had another job lined up yet, but there wasn't any reason to linger. They were due for a market stop, and Sissix was looking forward to having her feet on the ground for a while.
You know, Aya laughed at me for still playing pixel games. She said they're not cool.
Sissix blinked. Tell me she doesn't have a brain, Jack.
Oh, no. She just uses slappers.
Okay, then. Phew.
Slap patches weren't anything to worry about. They had a box of them in the rec room, little sticky sheets applied below the brainstem, a necessary accessory if you wanted to create a neural link between yourself and a sim, a vid, or the linkings. Slappers had come round after Sissix had reached adulthood, so while she used them on occasion, she still preferred the more tangible comforts of a pixel board and a scrib. Brainjacks, on the other hand, made her skin crawl. She couldn't imagine loving any hobby so much that it warranted putting a tech port in her head.
Ashby gestured at a pawn. Besides, I can't believe there's a doctor out there who'd put a jack in an 8-year-old, not to mention a parent who'd let it happen. Have you met any of Kizzy and Jenks's friends?
Fair point. Sissix took a sip of mech. She didn't usually start her mornings with the sleepy brew, but she had nothing to do until the cage was finished. She could justify being lazy. She tugged at the heat blanket wrapped around her shoulders, trying to coax away the lingering torpidity. Little brains have enough going on without getting all wired up. So do big brains, for that matter. That's what I told Aya. And what'd she say? She called me old. She rubbed his stubbled chin as he studied the board. I am officially the old, boring uncle. Sissix laughed. I highly doubt that. You let her fly our shuttle last time we visited the fleet. Ashby chuckled. I thought my sister was going to kill me. Exactly. And that makes you cool. Your move, by the way.
Dr. Sheff lumbered down into the garden, walking on 2 hand feet, carrying gardening supplies in the other 4.
How's the spice bread? He asked Ashby.
The crust's a little crispier than last time, Ashby said. I like it.
Glad to hear it. I thought you could all do with some complex carbohydrates after last night.
Ashby smirked. Hey, I left the carrier bar at a reasonable time, with my reputation intact. I am the very picture of restraint.
Ha, Sissix said.
A guilty grin spread across Ashby's face. Okay, maybe I got a little happy. A chorus of laughter erupted from Dr. Sheff's throat.
At least you were quiet about it. Unlike a particular trio of inebriated humans, I found raiding the med bay at 6th hour.
Oh, no, said Sissix with a smile. What did they do?
Nothing scandalous. Kizzy and Jenks were in search of some sober-ups, and Rosemary had fallen over onto one of the examination tables, dead asleep. I think she actually tried to match drinks with those two.
Sissix laughed. Oh, I bet she did. And I'm sure they talked her into it. By the time I left, they were 6 rounds of kick deep and had just ordered sugar snaps. Poor thing. She'll be miserable today.
Did you get her to her room?
Kizzy did. I think she put her in the freight elevator. Her feet and her brain were operating on completely different frequencies.
Ashby shook his head with amusement as he moved his rook.
Well, hopefully she understands that the text just wanted to give her a welcome, and that she never has to go through it again. He leaned back in his chair. Also, checkmate.
What? Sissix cried, leaning forward. No, that's... Wait. Shit!
Her shoulders sagged.
But I had a strategy and everything.
Sorry to mess it up. She studied the board, trying to figure out where she'd gone wrong. Nearby, Dr. Sheff was tending to one of his planters, breathing out a low, droning whisper, as always. His version of silence.
Sissix watched his pudgy fingers weave bracing knots of twine round the wandering shoots. Sissix never failed to be surprised by how agile Dr. Sheff's movements were. The man looked like a pudding with legs, yet his hand-feet let him move as nimbly as a dancer.
How's your ginger? Sissix said.
Fat and happy, he said, tying back the tall stalk. Dr. Sheff puffed his cheeks with pride. The ginger had been Jenks' idea, and few things made Dr. Sheff happier than meeting the crew's culinary requests. Although I have to admit, I like eating the flowers much more than the root. Far too potent for my taste. Nice and crunchy, though.
Ashby turned his head. You know ginger's an accent, right? Like a spice.
What? No, really?
Did you try to eat it whole?
Oh, dear, yes.
Dr. Sheff rumbled a laugh. I thought it was some sort of spicy potato.
I have never understood potatoes, Sissix said. The whole point of a potato is to cover it with salt, so you don't notice how bland it is. Why not just get a salt lick and skip the potato?
Don't ask me,
Ashby said, standing up. Potatoes are a grounder thing.
You done playing? Asked Sissix.
Yeah, it's a little after 10th hour. The news feeds will be updated.
His tone was easy, but there was a serious look in his eye as he said it.
Okay, she said. She knew what feeds he'd be checking, and it made her want to hug him. Not a quick, stiff human hug. A long hug. The kind you give to friends when you know something's bothering them. But she'd learned long ago that those kind of embraces just didn't happen platonically among humans. It was one of the many social instincts she'd learned to temper. Dr. Scheff tied one more knot, grumbled with satisfaction, and took Ashby's empty seat. In his top hand feet, he held a mug printed with an Ensk expression. Kiss the cook. A past birthday gift from Kizzy,
who always ignored the fact that none of the non-human crew members traditionally celebrated birthdays.
Sissix lifted the pitcher of mech sitting beside the pixel board. More. Dr. Scheff considered. Just half a cup, he said, extending the mug. I suppose we're all entitled to a lazy day once in a while. That we are. Sissix filled Dr. Scheff's mug halfway, then filled her own to the brim. She could feel the muscles in her cheeks and throat relax as the warm, bittersweet brew washed over them. The feeling bloomed throughout her shoulders, her neck, her arms, washing away all the remaining scraps of tension that the previous cup had softened. Stars, she loved mech. Dr. Scheff cradled his mug in his hand feet. He nodded towards the pixel board. A very typical human game. How so? All human games are based around conquest. Not true, she said. They've got lots of cooperative games. What about battle wizards? Scarcely a 10-day went by in which Kizzy and Jenks didn't plug into that game with slappers, even those two weren't dumb enough to jack, exploring magical worlds and sharing merry adventures inside their heads. Dr. Scheff waved a free handfoot dismissively. I don't mean brain games. I mean stuff like this, he said, gesturing to the pixel board. The classics. Things humans have been playing since before they even knew there were other planets out there. All conquests, all competition. Come to think of it, even Battle Wizards is like that. The players work together, but they're still working to defeat a common enemy. The game itself. Sissix mulled this over. The idea of humans as conquerors had always been a laughable one. Not just because they had meager resources or because the diaspora could never get anything done, but because the humans she knew personally were so unassuming. Ashby was one of the kindest individuals she'd ever met, of any species. Jenks didn't have any ambitions beyond living comfortably alongside people he liked. Kizzy had managed to drop a sandwich into an air duct last 10 day, so they hardly needed to worry about her launching a coup. Corbin was a hateful pain in the ass, but harmless, and a coward, too. And yet human history, pre-Exodus at least, was rife with cruelty and endless war. Sissix had never been able to make sense of that. Dr. Scheff pushed the chess pieces around the board. Grum games are rather similar, thematically. I think our species are rather alike in some ways. Humans would have died out, too, if the Aeluans hadn't chanced upon the fleet. Luck's what saved them. Luck and discovering humility. That's really all that makes humans different from Grum. Well, aside from the obvious, he chuckled, gesturing to his body. Sissix laid her hand across Dr. Scheff's closest foreleg. There would be no more Grum in a century or so, and there was nothing to be done about it. She knew that Dr. Scheff had long ago made peace with his species' impending extinction. Even as he referred to it now, there was no sadness in his voice, no bitterness. But that didn't mean that she couldn't feel it on his behalf. Dr. Scheff patted her hand, more for her sake than his. He glanced over his shoulder toward Ashby, who was leaning against the kitchen counter, reading feeds on his scrib. Dr. Scheff spoke in a low whisper,
quieting all the voices that came from his mouth.
Am I wrong? Or has Ashby been checking the news a lot these days?
Sissix nodded, knowing what he was asking.
The Rosk have been hitting the colonies at Kalo hard.
And that's where...
She was headed last, yeah. Not that the feeds give many details.
Understanding passed between them. They both knew that Ashby wasn't worried about a war that would never come to his doorstep. His concern revolved around one of the Aeluans stuck on the fringes of that war. Her name was Pei, and she and Ashby had been coupling as often as they could for years now. She was a civilian cargo runner, hired to haul medical supplies, ammo, tech, food, whatever the Aeluan forces needed. Given the nature of her work, she couldn't always send text or jump on the Ansible when she was heading into contested territory, for fear of giving away troop locations or becoming an easy target. Ashby often went 10 days without hearing from her, and during such times, it was not unusual to find him checking news feeds. When he did hear from her and had a rough idea of her location, the checking became all the more targeted. It didn't help Ashby's well-being at all. Not that Sissix could see, but humans always got a little dumb when sexual partners were involved. Close as Sissix was to Ashby, she'd never met Pei, or even seen her. The woman was an enigma, but Ashby's lack of forthcoming had nothing to do with Sissix, and everything to do with Aeluan prudishness. An Aeluan, especially one working alongside respectable soldiers, could get in a hell of a lot of trouble for pairing up with someone from another species. Everybody aboard the Wayfarer knew about Pei, of course, but they understood why Ashby needed to keep it quiet. Everyone had stopped asking questions about her, at least while Ashby was in the room, and even Kizzy was smart enough to keep her mouth shut about it when they were around other people.
"It's not good for him to check the news all the time," Dr. Sheff said. "It's not as if they'd print her name if anything happened."
"You tell him that," Sissix said.
"I can't," Dr. Sheff sighed. "I did the same thing when my daughters were off at war. That's why I don't like that he's doing it. I know how all that wondering can eat away at a person."
He shook out his cheeks, as if brushing himself off.
"This conversation has become entirely too heavy. Would you like to play a game with me, or have you had enough for one morning?"
"I'm down for another."
"You want to play chess?" "Stars, no. Let's play something, Andrisk. One of your lovely let's team up and solve a puzzle games."
"Ticket."
"Oh, I like Ticket. I haven't played it in years, though. Not since I lived in Port Coriel."
"Well, I'm not very good at it, so we'll be a balanced team."
She voiced the change in game to the board. The pixels reassembled themselves accordingly.
"So, what about Andrisk games?"
"Hmm?
What do Andrisk games tell you about us?"
"That you're clever, fond of sharing, and just as dysfunctional as everybody else."
Sissix laughed. "I can't argue that."
They began the game, and the conversation segued into Ticket's strategy. Sissix was just starting to think that they might actually win when Ashby broke his silence.
"Whoa," he said to himself.
Then again, more publicly, as he hurried back towards them, "Whoa."
"Everything okay?" Sissix said.
All spacers knew that a lot of bad things could happen to a ship in a short amount of time, especially when sitting in the mouth of a brand new tunnel. Seeing a crewmate in a hurry always made her adrenaline kick. "We're fine," he said. He laid his scrib down beside the pixel board and gestured over the screen. The vid feed playing on the screen leapt into the air and hovered above the scrib. It was a human news program, fleet-based, from the sound of the reporter's accent. Sissix and Dr. Sheff leaned forward to listen.
"Yet to confirm how long membership talks have been in place, but sources indicate that a small team of GC ambassadors have been secretly in communication with the Taremi Ka for at least 2 standard years.
"The Taremi?"
Dr. Sheff said, his whiskers rustling in surprise. Sissix could not mimic his physical response, but she shared the feeling. The Ceremi were not a species that was mentioned often in the news. They were not a species that was mentioned often at all. Sissix knew little of them, other than that they controlled a tight ring of territory surrounding the galactic core, and that they had been industrially killing each other for decades. Ashby shook his head, a gesture of both confirmation and disbelief. One of their clans has just been granted GC membership. Sissix set down her mug. What? Her brain reeled. Wait, what? If that was true, the Commons Parliament had gone insane. The Ceremi clans, from what few accounts of them there were, came across as both vicious and incomprehensible. Never a good mix. The clans had been discovered by the Hermagians nearly 500 standards prior, when a probe found Ceremi ships skip-diving, which was dangerous as hell, round and round the galactic core, like fish following a current. No one knew why, and the Ceremi themselves showed no interest in talking to their galactic neighbors. They kept up their nomadic loop until about 40 standards back, when they stopped in their tracks and started slaughtering each other over claims to stationary territories. And again, no one knew why. No one could get close enough to ask. The Ceremi blocked all access to the core. Ships that got close were pushed back. Ships that slipped through came back in pieces, or not at all. But aside from butchering trespassers, the Ceremi had kept to themselves, of no concern to anyone except the scientists and entrepreneurs frustrated by a walled-off core. Ashby put his finger to his lips and pointed to the scrib. Official statement from the GC Ambassadorial Committee explains that the Ceremi Ka are the only Ceremi clan currently taking part in this membership agreement, the reporter explained. Other clans have remained neutral in this agreement and reportedly have displayed no hostility toward the GC. The GC has vouched for the Ceremi Ka, stating, quote, "We stand by the good intentions of our new allies, who are committed to enjoying the benefits of a more unified galaxy." As part of the new membership agreement, the GC will not aid the Ceremi Ka in offensive attacks against other Ceremi clans. However, use of military force will be authorized to defend territories shared by the Ceremi Ka and the GC. Dr. Scheff scoffed. In other words, the Ceremi Ka get big GC battleships sitting on their borders, and the GC gets easy access to all the Ambi sitting on the other side. He shook his head. No good can come from a species at war with itself. Never has, never will. His eyes grew small, and he hummed deeply. Sissix knew his thoughts had gone to his own people, his own war. She reached out and squeezed his topmost shoulder. His eyes grew large again, focusing on her. He came back. He puffed his cheeks and laid one of his hand feet atop her claws. Wait, Ashby said. Huh? What? Sissix said. He blinked. This is what Yoshi was talking about. He looked at Sissix. She understood. We could do this, she said, and nodded. Yeah, we could handle this. Handle what? Dr. Scheff said. If they're going to be mining and pulling Ambi, they need a way to get their hauls back home. And they're going to need single-ship hops in place before they can start thinking about convoy tunnels, Ashby said. He straightened up, deep in thought. This is exactly the kind of work that could get us ahead. A job like this, they're not going to pay small. Work, repeated Dr. Scheff. You want to work out there with those people? Every tunneler is going to jump on this once they hear the news, Sissix said. Then we better beat them to it, said Ashby. Let's go draft a letter of intent. We need to call Yoshi, too. You think he's big enough to lead a project like that? No chance. But he'll know who to contact. I'll have Lovey send him a SIB invite. I have no idea what time it is there. And you'll need to help me figure out roughly how long it would take to get us to central space from our current location. I'm assuming that's where they'll want us to punch from. Is Rosemary up yet? Sissix remembered the last time she'd seen Rosemary the night before, head propped against her palm, smiling from ear to ear, words slurring thickly. I'm going to guess she's still asleep. Ashby rolled his eyes. Get her some sober-ups. This is exactly the sort of thing I hired a clerk for. I'll fix her a plate of breakfast, Dr. Chef said. He wagged a finger at Sissix. You tell the techs they picked a terrible night to break her in. To be fair, Sissix said, getting to her feet, I don't think they were planning on the GC losing its mind. Received message. Encryption 1. From Vlay Mok Hansib Inn. Path 4589-556-17. To Ashby Santoso. Path 7182-312-95. Subject, Tokath Hedra Ka Project. Kind greetings, Captain Santoso. My name is Vlay Mok Hansib Inn, and I'm writing to you on behalf of the GC Transportation Board. We have received your letter of intent regarding tunnel construction into Taremi Ka space. Connecting our allies to existing GC territories is a high priority for the Commons Parliament, and we have great need for skilled contractors such as yourself to help us enter into this new chapter of interspecies cooperation. After reviewing your work record and assessing our needs, we agree that the Wayfarer would be an excellent choice to assist in our endeavors with the Taremi Ka. This assessment is reflective not only of your professional experience, but also of your recent decision to employ a certified clerk. We see the latter as a sign of your dedication to upholding the standards of the GC Transportation Board. We are pleased to offer you the following project. The GC is in need of a new single-ship tunnel connecting Central Space, Tokath Gateway, to Hedra Ka, the capital planet in Taremi Ka territory. This would eliminate our current reliance on pinhole tugs in that sector, and would be our first step towards establishing cargo convoy tunnels. Before you accept, we ask you to carefully consider the conditions of this project. Normally, a blind punch would be the most expedient means of connecting to an unanchored territory. However, Hedra Ka is located in a soft zone. As I am sure you are aware, the environmental risk factors in such an area make a blind punch from Tokath nearly impossible. In the interest of protecting both spatial stability and sapient life, this project would require an anchored punch between Hedra Ka and the Tokath Gateway. As there are currently no tunnels that connect GC and Taremi space, this poses a challenge. We propose that the Wayfarer travels to the Del Elek lookout station at the GC border. This is the closest anchored point between GC space and Hedra Ka. A pinhole tug would rendezvous with you there in order to bring your ship through to Hedra Ka. Given your current position, we estimate that a journey to Del Lek would take between 0.8 and 0.9 standards, depending on your choice of route. The pinhole jump would take an additional 4 days. To help cut down your travel time, the GC would hire another contractor to place the exit cage at Tokath in advance. We understand that this is an unusual proposal, but given the circumstances, we do not have, nor require, a more expedient plan for completing this project. We also understand that the required travel time represents a significant commitment from yourself and your crew. The GC is willing to cover your basic living and operational expenses for the duration of your travels, in addition to your payment for the project. We also understand that space travel can impose unexpected delays, and that the mental health of your crew will require occasional rest stops along the way. In light of these needs, we do not demand a specific arrival date, but instead require that you arrive at any time before 165-307. You will also have the freedom to chart your own flight path and make stops as you see fit, though an efficient route is obviously a priority. If you are not confident that your crew or your ship can withstand this journey, it is best that you do not accept this project. The offered payment for the Hedra Ka project is 36 M credits. Expenses not included. Non-negotiable. We will expect a reply from you by 155-306. This project will not be offered to any other contractors during that time, so please do not make a hasty decision. If you have any questions regarding this project, feel free to contact my office. If I am not available, my AI, Tugu, will be able to assist you. With gracious regards, Vlay Mok Hansib In. Ashby, 0010. Sizzix, are you there? 0011. Pick up your script. 0014. Hello? Sizzix, 0015. Text. 0015. Really? 0016. How fucking quaint. Ashby, 0016. Did I wake you up? Sizzix, 0017. Yes. 0017. I'm going to complain my boss about this in the morning. Ashby, 0017. Sorry, it's important. 0017. I just forwarded you a letter. Sizzix, 0018. Why can't you come to my room? I hate typing. Ashby, 0018. Because I don't want anyone to hear what we're saying. Sizzix, 0018. Ship okay? Ashby, 0018. Yes, just read the damn letter. Sizzix, 0019. Give me a minute. 0019. Need to heat bed, I can barely move. Ashby, 0019. Get a heat blanket and let's go. Sizzix, 0024. Okay, better. 0024. Can actually use my hands now. Hooray. Ashby, 0024. Read it. Sizzix, 0024. Okay. 0027. Holy shit. Ashby, 0027.